Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to the Audio Road. I'm Kevin Rutherford, your host for the evening. I'm going to start off with a review, the week in trucking, what's going on with rates, what we can expect coming up. And then we'll open it up for your calls and questions. Let's go ahead and get those questions lined up now. So if you're listening and you're on the call, go ahead and press 1 on your phone. Lisa will get to you. She'll screen the calls, and we'll start getting to those right after I go over the rates. Last couple weeks, I have covered rates, and I admitted that I was kind of confused because we've had a nice steady climb in the market demand index, and yet the rates weren't following. I'm going to go through the rates, and then I'll give you an explanation of why that was, and there's actually some pretty good news on that front tonight. So the market demand index, this is a measure of available trucks on the spot market against available loads on the spot market, the spot market being freight not necessarily under contract, posted on load boards. And a lot of freight moves that way. In fact, the majority of freight moves through these boards. These are pretty good indicators of what's going on. There are two major indexes that I follow, one from the Internet Truck Stop, that's the Market Demand Index, and one from TransCore.dat. And they pretty much tell us the same thing every week. I like to look at them both just to verify. And I also get feedback from a lot of people on the road. And the feedback that I get from the real world pretty much mirrors what's going on in the indexes. So this is a great indication of what's going on. Spot market index up another 7% last week. Now, there's two ways the index can go up. We either have more freight. Actually, there's three. We either have more freight, less trucks, or a combination of both. And this week, we actually had more freight and more trucks, but we had more freight. So in order to be up 7%, it was kind of a combination. Load availability was actually up 10%. Truck availability was up just under 5%. We end up with a raise in the index of about 7%. The higher the index goes, the better it is for us, the people who own the trucks. We're up to 7.01 from 6.55. And that's the good news, and I'll explain what that is in just a little bit. Rates, though. Let's take a look at what happened to rates on the Internet Truck Stop site. Believe it or not, they decreased. Down a penny. Overall rates are down to $1.64 from $1.65. Flatbed rates down 1% to $1.49. Reefer rates down 1% to $1.67. Van rates down 3% to $1.42. Specialized up 2% to $1.98. And that's what has been confusing me for actually almost 2 months now. I've been watching the index increase, but I haven't been watching the rates increase. And I figured out why. Well, I didn't, but I went and found out why. All right. If we look over on the Transcore side, spot market load index week over week is up 32%. Year over year, it's actually up 66%. So the index is looking much better this year than it was in January of 2009. Let's take a look at the segments. Dry van load to truck ratio, let's see, week over week up 31%, but the rates are still down 1.2%. In the flatbed sector, week over week, spot market freight is up 44%. Now remember, this is just freight alone. This doesn't take into account what's going on with trucks. Let me take a look at what was going on in the truck index. Actually, week over week, the truck index was down. So there's more activity and more increase on the Transcore board than there was on Internet Truck Stop. So both of them showing pretty big increases. If we look at the reefer segment, the spot market load-to-truck ratio up 30% and rates pretty much flat. They're actually down 0.7%, which isn't even enough to measure. Here's what's going on, and I was confused by this. When we were seeing such big increases in available freight, trucks down somewhat as far as available trucks, so the indexes keep climbing, but the rates have been flat. According to the economist at the Internet Truck Stop that puts this information together, historically, the turning point is 7. The turning point in their index is 7. Remember, I just told you we went to 7.01. It's the first time we've been above 7. I'd have to go back and look, but I bet it's almost 2 years since we've been above 7. And we just went above it. That's kind of the tipping point where you start to have some negotiation power. Even though we were seeing increases for the last several months, we were down so low that even with those increases, the balance was still in favor of the shipper and the broker. Now the balance is starting to turn. You should start to notice if you are out negotiating spot market freight that you'll have a little more negotiation power. And the higher this goes, the better off you're going to be. But that 7 is kind of the magic number. If we stay above that, I think we'll finally see rates start to come up with this. If you're leased to a carrier and your carrier is out there negotiating, you may see rates come up as well, and you should see more available freight. So no matter what you're doing, these indexes going up is good news. And again, I think we're going to continue to see the freight going up. I think the truck availability, it's going to bounce around week to week. I think some weeks we'll have less. I think overall we still have a lot of thinning out to do in the industry. I still think we're going to lose a lot of trucks and a lot of carriers before we come out of this, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Certainly a good thing for the ones of us who are left. All right, I am going to get to the phone calls now. If you've got a question and you're on the call, press 1 on your phone. Right now there are some lines open, and Lisa will get to your call and screen it, and I'll get to your question here pretty quickly. Let's start off in Wyoming. Patrick, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Good evening, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing good. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, if you listen to some of the guys, you know, some of the economists and stuff that are out there, I think you touched on this here a few minutes ago, but, you know, the worst of this thing isn't over if you listen to what some of them are saying. And sounds like you're kind of saying the same thing. Some carriers and little trucking companies and that kind of stuff are maybe going to fall to the wayside. I mean, but the rates, even though you say they're down a little bit, they're still not all that bad. And, I mean, fuel, if fuel would kind of level off, I think we could still we come out of this, the strong will inherit the earth, or whatever you want to call it, I guess. And just kind of want to pick your brain a little bit. So what are your thoughts on it? I mean, do you think we're going to lose some more carriers? And do you think these rates are going to hold, or do you think we're going to see an increase in them? Because I got a reefer and a flatbed out there running some over-the-road stuff, and they're both not doing just too bad.
Good. And I think that it will get better as long as you're one of the carriers that survives. And I think from what I'm hearing, you're going to be. There are a lot of reasons that everything isn't, you know, sunshine and roses for everybody just because we're starting to turn this around. And here are some of them. Credit right now has been extended to everybody. You know, I talk to a lot of people in a lot of different businesses, in trucking, out of trucking, you know, garages, everything from a truck garage to a truck dealership to printing shops. I mean, every time I talk to somebody, I have a lot of relationships, and I'm always asking them, what's going on in your business? And I'll tell you, the number one thing going on is people are waiting for the economy to turn around so that they can get paid. You know, a lot of people are saying, look, we're doing okay business-wise. We're not that slow. It's just nobody has any money. You know, and everybody seems to be extending credit to everybody else to kind of keep everything going. You know, we do it. We have more credit out now than I've ever had. And everybody I talk to, the shop that works on my trucks, they're doing okay. They've got business, but they've got more receivables than they've ever had. And I think that's that way with everybody. The banks have, you know, let people go without making truck payments longer than they ever have. And what will happen is when the economy starts to turn around and those people who are on the very edge just getting by and they're behind on payments everywhere, somebody's going to crack down on them. Somebody's going to say, hey, you know what? We don't have to extend this kind of credit anymore. Business is picking up. We're starting to collect our money, and we're not going to do it. You know, here's the deal. You either pay up or we're shutting you off. And that's one of the factors that as things start to look better, for some people it's going to get worse. Go ahead.
Well, and I haven't seen a decrease. We built the shop here last year on the home place, and we've been working on our own trucks, and so we've been saving a lot of money doing that kind of stuff. Now, I haven't seen a big decrease in parts. In fact, you know what? I've seen more of an upslope between 9 and 13, 14% on some of these parts. And I run Kenworth trucks, and on these K parts, it's killing us. I'll be real honest with you, but we pay our bills. So I thought by now that we'd be seeing some of this stuff come down a little bit because the economy, that would make the economy kind of chug along. But maybe I'm mistaken.
I'm right there with you. You know, it seems to me like Volvo parts are the most expensive in the world and hard to get. I have to overnight something every time I want it because, you know, Volvo doesn't keep anything in stock. But I don't know that we'll necessarily see prices come down. What we'll see, I think, and again, this is just, you know, from my own personal experience and what I hear on the radio is that everybody was hurting so bad from this economy that nobody was – they were cutting brakes on credit. But on the other hand, I was seeing shops that were pushing to get more work when it wasn't necessarily legitimate. You know, I've seen shops recommending in-frames based on an oil analysis. And I look at the oil analysis and – tell the people, they must be insane. There's nothing wrong with this oil analysis, and you've got a shop recommending an in-frame. Absolutely not. And it just seems like I saw a lot more of that going on. Businesses trying to create work when it wasn't necessarily there. So, you know, when we see an economy as bad as it's been for the 2 years, and, you know, in the 25 years I've been in business, this was the worst I've been through. You see, you see different behaviors and you see extremes of behavior. So we're kind of experiencing some things we haven't really seen before. I'd almost, and I know this kind of makes people crazy when I say this, But I would almost like to see a short-term surge in fuel prices, and we might. As demand goes up, we may see fuel prices go up. I'd like to see a spike to about $3.50 for a couple months. And I think
I don't know if I'd like to see it go that high, but I'm still a firm believer living in Wyoming where I live and having been a part of the oil field like I was about 10 or 12 years ago. About $80 a barrel, and the economy seems to be doing pretty good.
Well, I'd like to see it just because I think it would speed up this process that we're going through of getting some of the weaker carriers out of the market, the carriers who probably aren't going to survive even though things are turning around. And you know, it's for a lot of reasons, some I just outlined, but they're not going to make it. Let's, you know, kind of get it over with quickly so the rest of us can get back to making money.
Basically, in your mind's eye, then, it's basically just finish culling out the herd, basically.
Right. And a lot of people feel like, wow, we're turning the corner. There's a little more freight available. We can start to negotiate better rates. But things will also start to get much more competitive when that happens. So for some people who believe they're turning the corner, they're really about to fall off the map, I think.
Well, and these guys that are taking loads just to get rolling, I don't know if I agree with that philosophy or not. They throw a load at them for 95 cents because they know that they went in for, say they went into an area for $1.75 and the people, you know, the brokers know what inbound freight's costing to get it into that area, but they can offer it out for 95 cents. And these guys are snatching those kind of loads up. And I understand that in the average it comes out, but why wouldn't you want to make as much as you can possibly make to that truck?
Well, we do. Everybody does. But it still always comes down to supply and demand, and there will always be bottom feeders in any industry. And the bottom feeders will always they're there. They exist. I mean, and it's any business, any industry. We're not alone in the trucking industry. And they will always bring rates down. But the bottom feeders won't last through this kind of stuff either. They hang on, they drag rates down for all of us, but it's all part of, you know, supply and demand in a free market. We just have to live with those things and, you know, be better than that when we go in. And it's frustrating because as long as they're there, as long as they're in the market, then yeah, freight is going to get moved at that rate until we get back to, you know, a better balance of supply and demand. And at least we're heading in that direction.
Well, I agree with you, and I'm seeing it firsthand too. So, I mean, we're not cutting a fat hog in the ass by no means, but we're making our bills.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing right now. If you're making money right now, and like you said, rates aren't climbing, but rates really aren't that bad.
Nope.
I mean, there's some really cheap freight out there if you're taking it, but there's also some pretty good loads if you know what you're doing.
And I think in my case, I've got the right guy in the right place. My son-in-law does some dispatching for us, and he used to be a truck salesman. So basically, the guy knows how to negotiate, and that's what you need.
That's exactly right. And that skill is going to become even more important in the coming months.
You bet. My cheese moved, and we had to go figure out where our cheese went. So I mean, that's kind of where we've been here in the last couple of months, And it's been stressful on the wife and I, but you know what? We found our cheese, and I think we're doing okay.
Yeah, there you go. Good stuff.
All right, man. Well, thank you for answering my question and taking my call. I appreciate it. Have a good evening.
You're welcome. Good talking to you. That's the kind of feedback I like to get, too. And 9 times out of 10, the feedback I get mirrors the indexes that we're looking at. These are, you know, I've been doing the index thing for a little over a year now, and this is a pretty good indicator of what's going on. You know, as far as being able to negotiate, that's another good point about why we're going to see people drop off the map, even though things are getting better. Because what will happen, the bottom feeders, the people who don't understand negotiation, the people who don't follow rates, they're the last ones to know that things are getting better. And they will be the ones who will continue to move freight at those bottom feeding rates, and they won't be able to sustain it. As everybody else is negotiating for better rates, they will still be out there moving freight for less than they have to just because they don't know any better. That's why it really pays to stay up on top of this stuff and be ahead of the curve. You know, right now, if you have this information, you're ahead of the curve. You realize that the balance is shifting, and you know it ahead of time. Rates might not be climbing yet, but you need to start negotiating a little harder all the time. If you want to join us, there are some lines available. Go ahead and press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will screen your call. We'll get you on the air. I'm going to head to South Carolina for this question. Tony, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. What's on your mind?
I got a couple of questions, but I agree with what you say. Everything that I'm seeing has been picking up a lot here lately. Especially this week, I've seen a real big surge and more loads on the board this week, and rates actually going up in my section of the world anyway.
Well, just to touch on that real quick, the indexes that I get were actually about a week behind. By the time they put the numbers together and give me the report, I'm actually about a week behind. So you may very well see rates start to climb before we see it in the reports. That's a good thing.
Right. What do you think about YRC? I haven't heard anything about them lately. You think they're actually going to go on under, or what's your opinion
on
that?
That's a good question. I thought they were toast for a while there, and then I haven't seen anything in the news, so I get so busy reading stuff that if I don't see a headline about it, I don't necessarily go looking for it. But I'm going to make a note and see if I can find out anything new that's going on. I know they secured a couple deals with the union, and they secured a couple deals with banks to buy them a little more time, but things weren't looking good. The other thing I notice is that there are some of the other LTL carriers who seem to have weathered this storm pretty well are getting very aggressive on marketing and pricing, and that's going to put a hurting on them.
Right. Well, I've talked to a lot of the other UPS and FedEx and, the other LTL carriers, and even back in December, they said that, they was really picking up because everybody was trying to get away from YRC because they were scared that they was going under, so they was moving their freight to the other carriers, which wasn't helping YRC any.
No, exactly, which is, kind of like the double whammy. When the news starts to get out that you're really in trouble, then everybody bails on you and you are really in trouble. I noticed last night I was watching it was probably Fox News. I'm not sure. I was watching a show somewhere, and I saw a TV commercial for Old Dominion. I thought that was pretty wild.
Yeah, it is.
It was actually a really good commercial, too.
Well, that was good. They're a good company. They've been around for forever, pretty much.
Yeah, I think they're doing just fine, and I think there are a lot of LTL carriers that are going to put a hurting on YRC. It wouldn't break my heart to see them go under.
Right. Had a question on drums. I got a heavy old Volvo with the lightweight drums on my drives. Well, they're all the way around, but talking about my drives, they're $150 a piece. And they're about 20 pounds lighter, so it's going to make me about 80 pounds heavier if I go with a regular drum, I can get them for about $50 a piece. So we're talking about a $400 difference there for 80 pounds. What do you think about that?
Are you in a really weight-sensitive operation?
Maybe once a month, that 80 pounds could possibly hurt me. I'm right now, I can haul about 44.1.
Okay.
So, you know, that took me down to right at 44,000, which,
you know, it might not seem, yeah, it might not seem like much, but if you think about it, if there's one load a month you have to give up because of this 80 pounds, that's 12 loads a year. And, you know, you would eat up that little bit of savings really quick. Now, for me, I weight just isn't that big of a deal. I don't want to build a heavy truck, but, you know, I'm never, in my operation, never going to be overweight with my tractor. So I would just buy the less expensive drums. But if I had to give up one load a month, or possibly if it even put me on the borderline, or if it meant that because I had these drums I had to put on less fuel, I'd spend a little bit extra to get the lightweight drums.
Okay. And on my trailer, my front drive axle on my trailer, got the passenger side. Both tires are wearing just on that inside, that first tread, and on the driver's side, it's the opposite. It's wearing just on the outside tread on both tires. What do you think about that?
That's kind of bizarre. The inside tread is almost for sure going to be bearing adjustment. So I would just have the bearings checked on that. If you were to feel the wear, if you were to run your hand like in and out across the tire, is it smooth or do you feel an edge on the wear at all?
I don't know. I've heard you say that a million times, and I've done my hand back and forth across them, and I can't really tell, but that don't mean that it's not there.
You know what you can do? And
I don't know I guess.
Yeah, and one of the ways to get a little better at this, because it took me a while to figure it out too, was every time I saw a truck tire anywhere with funny wear, I would feel them so that I could get better at feeling what that edge means. Once you know what that edge is, what's called feathered wear, then you'll feel it every time. In the beginning, you're kind of, you know, I'm not sure if I'm feeling it or not, but once you feel enough tires and you notice the difference between smooth and feathered, then every time you feel feathered, you'll know that you're feeling it. And, you know, smooth indicates usually bearing, balance, something like that. Feathered wear is almost always an indication of some sort of misalignment because the tire is being dragged, you know, down the road rather than rolling freely. So check that and see. I would have bearings looked at, though, and make sure they're tight before I looked at anything else. If you want to join us, press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will get to your call. I am going to get to some questions here. Let's see. Where am I? I'm going to head off to, let's go to Nevada. Lance, welcome to the program.
Evening, Kevin. You know, that deal with the YRC, if I'm not mistaken, they were able to secure 80% funding to operate for the rest of the year.
Oh, did they get that much? I know I saw something. Wow.
They were real close to not getting much at all, and if I'm not mistaken, it was 80% of what they needed. But that's only for the year. That's it. What's going to happen?
Well, you know, that would make sense, though. That's probably why I'm not seeing any headlines anymore, because they've bought themselves some time. Do you remember if it said if it was this calendar year or if it was their fiscal year?
I think it was their fiscal year, which it would be, I think they run to the 6 months.
Right, I think so too. So that, you're right, that's really not a lot of time. That doesn't buy them much time, and I think they're getting hammered by a lot of the other LTL carriers right now.
Well, and the one thing that does bother me is they were one of the carriers that was trying to push for some of that bailout money, and they never got any, but, you know, the Teamsters Union is a very, very strong union. And
I'm glad they didn't get the bailout money, that's for sure. But you're right, they were one of the only companies in the trucking industry that went to Washington and said they needed bailout money. That just didn't happen very much.
Now, the other thing on the rates, the rate indexes you show, I haven't looked in a while, but do they still also have segments where they show load ratio and crossed per, I can't think what it is, part of the country? Like, they used to do, like, four-part country or six-part. You'd have northeast, southeast, upper plains, southern plains. They still do that or no?
No, I haven't been able to find that. The it's broken down by segment, and then they do give, and I don't read the whole thing just because it takes more time. They do give, like, the hot regions where there is most load availability, and it's just done by state, so it can be kind of all over the board, like you know, the hot regions right now, the states with the most load availability compared to, let's see, they actually break it down, most load availability and most truck availability. So you actually got to try to match them up. Like, you know, Rhode Island, Vermont, and New Hampshire are on the hot list. But, you know, how many loads are you really going to get out of places like that?
Right. Well, I used to follow that quite a bit, and it seemed – it worked out good because you could see the trends. Every year, you know, certain produce is going to be surging, and that, and it was nice to also watch the dry van freight or whatever. You could see where the southeast would pick up and the northeast would let loose. Almost every year, it was a trend. You could almost bet on it, and I'm wondering if it's still like that now or not.
Well, you know, it might be, and the thing about reading this is that, you know, I come on and I give the highlights, but, you know, when you sit down and you really start studying this kind of stuff and you look at it every week and you follow it for months, like you said, you start to see trends. It's not just that you could pick this thing up once and really learn a lot. You have to study it over time.
Right. Well, also, I was looking at, I'd like to see more on the rail side because I've been noticing I drive all over. Starting to see stuff on the rail I've never seen before, like John Deere combines, entire trains full of wide loads. I never used to see that on there. Windmill blades, they're so long they take up two rail cars. I never used to see that stuff on the train.
Wonder what's going on with that.
It's all about the revenue.
Competition. They must be moving it cheaper.
Yeah, I just don't know. Kind of itch. That's just moving on the rail. It means it's not moving on the truck, so it has to be affecting the rates. But I don't know. I think it's interesting. I wish there was a way to track that type of stuff, which I don't think there is on the rail side.
I don't think there is either. I don't, you know, I subscribe to a couple magazines that are logistics magazines. So, you know, there's always information in there about, you know, containers and ocean and air and rail, but I have never seen anything or any links to any kind of indexes where we could track that.
Right. Well, see, because I look at the trucking side, we all know the problems we've had here, and I look from what I read on the rail side, they're seeing massive growth. Everything from, you know, hauling double stack containers and stuff like that. Stuff, and we can't even get them to allow heavier trailers and whatnot and or multiple trailers in the trucking industry. It seems like no one wants to go for that.
No, everybody feels like they'll be moving more freight and more weight for the same amount of money. But sometimes it's you know, you have to look at, are we losing that kind of freight to other modes?
Yeah. No, that's all I had. I was just curious on if they still broke it down like that or not. But you guys have a good night.
All right, you too. Thanks. Good stuff. If you want to join us, press 1 on your phone if you've got a question about whatever. We're talking about rates just because I opened with it, but if you've got any questions whatsoever, the usual stuff, fuel mileage, maintenance, taxes, if you've got another topic that you want to talk about, we've got about 25 minutes left in the program still, and we don't have to take any breaks on this show, so that's kind of nice. So if you've got a question, a topic, a comment, whatever it is, press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will get right to you. I'm going to go to Iowa this time. Mark, welcome to the program. It's your turn.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing?
I'm doing good. What's on your mind?
Well, I want to make a twist here a little bit. I'm a lease purchase driver. I don't have
okay.
The thing that most owner operators foresee themselves as. And I was wondering, as far as the pay, they always complaining about, oh, we at least purchase people should try to get more freight, but we are pretty much governed under the contract that we sign with the company that we are leased to.
Right.
So I guess the question I'm asking is, how can we, knowing the situation that we're in, get better freight if we can only get the freight through the company that we're leased to? And then if we are not, like, I'm blessed to have my truck paid off at the end of this year. Okay.
Right.
And I was actually wondering also if there are other people out there that have any suggestions as far as what I would do, because I have no idea once my truck is paid off. I know that I'm tired being under the umbrella that I'm under. And
right.
I want to make a change. I want to make more money. And I don't want to work for other people. I guess my own authority may be an ideal. And maybe where would I go? I heard Transtar is pretty good. I know if I was able to get in Trans Am or something like that, where they dispatch themselves.
Landstar.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Yes, and I know
yeah.
I can make a killing with them. But I guess I want to know how can or if there's a way that you could put on your site, because I'm also on your Less Truck site.
Okay.
And I would love to see some type of documentation as to, because I'm not really a new at this business as far as owner operators are concerned. I actually had 200 trucks before this one. But the thing is, just because I had them doesn't mean that I know about the maintenance on them, doesn't mean that I know when certain things are supposed to be done on the truck.
Right.
So is there a possibility that your site or your people who does your website can put up some recommendation as to when, like, per se, oil change for newcomers in the industry? You want to know, when should I get my oil change? Or when is a good time to know when you need a wheel adjustment? How about my clutch? How do I know if my clutch is going bad? Because I actually was going to, I don't want to name the company because they didn't really do me any bad justice.
Hold
it's just that they didn't do good
on.
Justice for me. Yes.
Okay, hold on. I'm gonna take your – we've already got off to about six questions here and six topics, and they're all good ones. But my ADD is kicking in, and I'm already forgetting what the first thing you asked was. So, I mean, it's great that you've got a lot of questions, and I love this, but I have to take them, you know, one or two at a time, or we'll just get off on too many tangents, and I might have to work backwards. As far as maintenance and recommendations, tune in this Friday night, and that's part of what the show is going to be about. And if you listen on Friday nights to Trends in Technology, there are a lot of those kind of topics we're going to cover. We couldn't possibly do it in one show, but that's really what Friday's show is all about. I will probably cover some of the overlooked maintenance items and some maintenance schedules, but that will be an ongoing thing because there is a lot to learn. Rates are the same way. You know, you're asking, how does this affect lease operators and why would you need to know this information? And I teach at the CMC, I teach a couple hours about increasing revenue, understanding rates, using the tools that are available. And before I start, I always ask anybody in the room, you know, if they feel like this doesn't apply to them. And usually somebody who is in a lease purchase, you know, on a fixed mileage rate will say, well, that stuff doesn't apply to me. And the only way it wouldn't apply to you is if you're absolutely under a forced dispatch and you have no choice on your loads. And if you're in that situation, then, you know, all I could tell you is that unless you plan on being in that situation your entire career, you should start learning about rates because, you know, what Lance and I were just talking about, this takes time to learn this stuff. You learn it over time and you spot trends. So this stuff really does apply to everybody. Even if the rates don't matter to me, the load availability does. If I understand the different lanes and I understand the trends and I know where the better load availability is, even if I'm getting paid the same rate, I don't want to be in areas that don't have a lot of freight. I want to keep moving into areas where I know I'm going to move right back out, and I'm going to keep freight on the trailer, and I'm going to keep the trailer moving, and I'm going to keep the wheels turning and making money. So I think everybody in the industry can benefit from learning this stuff if they ever want to own a truck or be an owner-operator. I think as a driver, I could benefit from this information. Even if I don't have, you know, complete choice over where I go, I might have some. And the information is just important to have. So I think I covered a couple of your questions, but keep listening to this show and Friday Night Show. Those are the two very trucking-specific news shows that we're doing, and we'll cover a lot of those questions over time. Thursday nights, that's The Pit, Politics and Trucking. Tomorrow night should be a good one, though. I'm going to talk about healthcare, and I'm hoping that I get some people from the website who don't necessarily agree with my opinions on healthcare to join us on the call and talk about their opinions. All right, let's get to some more calls. Let's go to let's go to Canada this time, north of the border. Kurt, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how's it going?
Going good. What can I help you with?
Kevin, I've got 2010 Peach, the ISX 15, 390s, and 24.5s.
Really?
So the operation that I'm at is I haul Super B grain trains. So we're considered a heavy haul, I would say. We're GVW about 140 thou.
Yeah, that makes sense then. Okay.
Yeah. So I've been all over the map trying to find the sweet spot with these trucks, but unfortunately, due to the new technology, I've done an in-frame in one truck and a service block in the other, and both under 80,000 K, so 60,000 miles.
You got to be kidding me.
Yeah. So first truck was a EGR cooler failure, and the second truck was, well, they don't know, a warped head, and the liners were smashing the head.
Wow.
Yeah, so I run, well, our speed limit's up here, we're at about 70 mile an hour, so I've been playing anywhere from 60 to 70 mile an hour, and I can't seem to get above 3.
Wow. You know, here's the thing. All of the factors we talk about in fuel mileage, the biggest one being aerodynamics, the second biggest being rolling resistance, everything is magnified by two things: the speed that we travel and the weight that we pull. We will magnify everything. I mean, it's just pure physics that it takes more energy to move more weight down the road. And when we try to move more weight at a higher speed, that energy consumption gets magnified. It's not even a straight line. It's exponential. So if it were me, knowing what I know about fuel mileage and physics and all these other things, if I had to haul anything over what we consider, you know, normal down here, 80,000 pounds, I would really do everything I could to never go faster than 57 miles an hour. I mean, unless the operation demanded it, I would do everything I could to manage my time better, to figure out a way that the 1 mile an hour is going to make a much bigger difference to you at 140,000 pounds than it does to somebody else at 70,000 pounds. So speed is going to be absolutely critical. And with 390s, you should be able to run this truck easily at 60 or below. 70 would just be out of the question.
Right. Okay, well, I'm empty right now. I'm doing 70, and I'm turning about 1550.
Yeah, which on those engines is just way too high. I mean, they should perform well, especially empty. You should be able to let that engine drop all the way down to 1300 just fine. Now, when you're heavier, you're going to have to play around with that RPM a little bit because the engine might not perform well down there with that kind of weight, and that's something you got to play around with. Do you have a turbo boost gauge and a pyrometer?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Kind of, that's something you can play around with on the level. And you know, when you're at a specific weight and you're on a road that you know and there isn't any goofy wind conditions like, you know, a 40-mile-an-hour headwind, play around with how much turbo boost it's taking to move the truck down the road at a given speed, what your pyrometer temperature's doing. Now, having said that, everything I'm saying is assuming that we have a healthy engine. And I don't think that's the case here.
Okay.
And that's the big, you know, factor that we have to overcome. I mean, if the engine's not healthy, then sometimes we do see those, you know, goofy scenarios where you go 5 miles an hour faster and fuel mileage doesn't go down. And it can only happen, really, when we've got some mechanical problem going on, and you've had so many changes in these trucks in a short period of time that it might be hard to nail this down, but I think your first priority has to be to get these trucks and engines performing properly and then go from there. But I can promise you that your fuel mileage should go up. In this operation, the difference between 70 miles an hour when you're loaded and 55 miles an hour should be 2 full miles to the gallon.
Yeah, it'd sure be nice to see that.
That's the way it should be, and that's what we've got to get to. But you've got to get the mechanical issues fixed first. And I wish I had more help with the mechanical issues, but these EGR engines, and now with the DPF, we're just having a much more difficult time. And obviously, you've had some major problems wrong with yours. You might want to consider trading these things in on a couple glider kits. Seriously, we could build you 2 trucks that would outperform those. You know, instead of 3 miles to the gallon, we could build a couple glider kits that would perform so much better, be more drivable, and get you up into that 5 to 5.5 range. I'd be very interested to see if we could build a glider, if we knew the operation you were going to put it in, and you just described some of it to me, I would be very interested to see if we could build a truck that would get 6 in this operation. And I don't know that it's possible, but boy, I'd be willing to give it a shot. Let's go to Utah. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Hey, good day to you, Kevin. Quick question about tire wear. On my last axle on the tractor, the inside of the driver's side tire is wearing a little faster, and it's got a little, like, jump pattern to it. Now, on the other side, on the passenger side, it did it a little bit, but then it stopped. It hasn't increased any. It's only in one spot, and then it hasn't increased any. But on the driver's side, it's increasing steadily, and I was wondering, would that be do I need a new shock absorber, or is that an alignment just for one tire over there? Because all the other tires on the whole truck were fine.
Yeah, it's probably not alignment. Shocks wouldn't hurt, but it's more than likely it's going to be bearing adjustment.
Okay, well, I have to give that a shot. Another question. I started running, like, I know you like the Michelin, and I found the Michelin dealer by my house, and they run the Michelin, and they have the Michelin cap. Now, they have the XDA Energy tread that you could put on the cap, so I've been running those. Now, would that be a higher roller resistance than, you know, the regular XDA Energy, or would it, you know, how would that go?
Yeah, it will be higher, and there's a couple factors here. We know that a cap will always be higher than the original tire, and then there's another factor that we have to be careful of. What casing did they use for the cap?
With the exception of 2 of them, they were all mine to start with.
Okay, and what kind of tire was it?
Two of them were steer tires, which were the Bridgestone 287, and then the rest of them were the 726 EL casing.
See, there's the difference, because rolling resistance is made up of several factors. The tread is part of it, and I think it's about 60%, and 40% is from the casing itself. So if we start with a tire that had lousy rolling resistance to begin with, we're going to have worse rolling resistance when we use that casing, but we don't know what the numbers are going to be. There isn't any formula that I'm aware of, but we do know that it's going to be higher. Now, when you took your, you know, when you took the 287s and then you put in an XDA energy cap on it, you should come up with a pretty decent tire for rolling resistance, not as good as an original. But when you start with the 720 60Ls and then we put in XDA energy, you may end up somewhere in between the two, but we just don't know. But the one thing I can tell you is, no, it's not as good as a new XDA energy would be.
Okay, well, thank you for the info, Kevin. Have a good night.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. If, let's see, we are coming down. We've got about 9 minutes left. I've got a couple more calls to get to, but I think I can squeeze in a couple more as well. So if you've got a question, press 1 on your phone right now, and Lisa will get to you, and I'll try to get to as many as I can. I'm going to go to Texas for this one. Ronald, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how's it going?
Going great. What's up?
I have got a question on, you always talk about, you know, well, get your truck into a good front end shop. And I was wondering if you happen to have found one when you were in the Denver area.
No, but what I'm going, because I didn't have any trucks out there and I really didn't look into it. But what I would have you do is either call MD Alignment or go to their website.
Okay.
And look for a shop that uses their system and their training.
Okay.
What are you looking for alignment? Do you think you've got some wear issues or what?
No, actually, I don't have any wear issues or anything like that. I have like a noise. I know I'm going to need kingpins here real quickly. But I started hearing a noise when I turn. It doesn't matter what speed, but when I turn sharply, let's say I'm going around the truck stop or something, and I cut the wheel kind of hard. I call it like a knuckling sound. It just kind of, you know, sounds like something shifting. But it sounds like it might be in, you know, like the end of the steering. I don't know what you call those knuckles or whatever they're on there, but it just has a sound to it. And and you can't see it shifting or anything anywhere where it has shifted on the suspension, but something is definitely making a noise.
Give MD Alignment a call. The number is 800-617-5592, and you know, not sure when we're going to have them back on again, but Mike Beckett and MD Alignment will be a pretty regular guest on the Friday night shows, Trends and Technology. But I call them and check out where they have a shop, because you know, the first step in any good alignment is to inspect the front end, inspect the drive axles, look over, you know, the suspension for any kind of wear first, and that's what they should be doing with that. Let's go to Indiana this time. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I run primarily Ontario, so my truck is governed at 65. I run a C15 475 cat.
Okay.
The problem I run into is my truck, once it gets to 65, it cuts out or whatever it does, and then it goes to 64, 63, 62, and then the computer, you know, starts to think again, and then it gives me fuel or however it works, and then climbs back up. So it's a constant 65, 64, 63, 62, and then it goes back up. Is that typical of a cat, or do I need to get something looked at? Other than that, it runs great. It's been doing that ever since I've had it turned on.
Yeah, you need to get something looked at because somebody set the parameters wrong in the ECM. It absolutely shouldn't do that. When we set the parameters, there used to be something that people would call being up against the governor. And, you know, if you were taught how to drive before electronic engines, and we had mechanical governors, you would, if it was governed at 65 and you tried to run 65, you would hit 65 and the fuel pump would back off, and then you'd hit 65 and it'd back off, and you'd get almost this surging effect, and it was really horrible for the engine. So a good driver would just know that instead of trying to go 65, you just hold your speed at 64 instead, and you wouldn't keep bumping the governor. Now, that doesn't apply to ECM. Electronically controlled engines, there is no such thing as being up against the governor the way we were taught. So this is just wrong. I'm not sure what they screwed up in there, but it shouldn't do this. If it's set at 65, you should hit 65, and it should just stay there, you know, other than, you know, if you hit a hill, it's going to drop down some. But on the level, it should absolutely just stay right at 65.
And I hardly pull anyway with what I'm hauling, and even in the flat, it doesn't. It's not a time issue. I could care less about the time. We got all the time in the world. It just gets annoying after a while, and then it's something wrong.
Yeah. Now, there's definitely something wrong. It shouldn't do that. What you might want to try is set the cruise at 63 and see, you know, if it'll still hold speed there. But something's wrong, and I'm not even sure what it is. But get it into a cat garage and let them take a look at the ECM and the settings in that. Let's go to Ohio. Ron, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Kevin.
Hello there.
I was calling because the caller before last, it sounds like his spring shackle bushings are going.
I think I know that sound that he's talking about, and I've had some trucks do it. And some, you're right, spring shackles are a good first place to start. Kingpins usually don't do that. And if we've got, you know, bad kingpins, we usually see, you know, goofy front end wear, and he's not, you know, saying he's got any of that. But I've seen several things cause this sound. I've actually seen cab mounts do this.
Yeah, I've seen that once. But a lot of times with kingpins, you'll decide that you're no longer a truck driver and you're a truck herder.
Yeah, exactly. You'll get some wandering going on. But, you know, this is one of those things that typically I tell people the only reason to go get an alignment is funny handling or funny tire wear. And if you don't have either one, leave it alone. Your odds of going into an alignment shop and getting it fixed when there was nothing wrong, your odds are higher that they're going to screw something up. But this is one other case when we've got this kind of a noise going on. And it sounds like it's in the front end, then I would get it into a good front end shop and get it inspected.
It's always best to err on the side of safety when it's your front suspension.
Yeah, absolutely. No question.
If you've got a minute, I've got an oddball retirement question.
You can try. We're down to about a minute and a half.
All right. I've got an opportunity to buy a trailer for about a seventh of what it's worth. And I'm a company driver. I was wondering if there's any way I could take the money in my IRA and buy it, hold it for a year or two, and try and sell it when the economy turns.
No. You can't, not without paying the penalties and tax on the money to do it.
I don't think I want to get into that, but the guy's about to lose it. He wants $12,000 for a 53-foot stretch step deck four axle.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, there are deals like this everywhere. And I know they, when we see them, we think, boy, that is like the deal of the century. But I tell you what, I wouldn't invest $12,000 in it right now, hoping that the market comes back, because there's a lot of equipment sitting around, and I certainly don't know when the market's going to come back in order for you to make money. If you had $12,000 cash sitting around and you were willing to take that risk, I would say knock yourself out. I would highly recommend against taking it out of your IRA to do it, because you will pay, roughly, you're going to lose, you know, as much as on 12,000, you're going to lose every bit of 25% of that money. I'm all out of time. Thanks, everybody. See you in 30 minutes. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good night.